Hello and welcome to the Cardinia Capital Podcast. My name is Jodie Saw from Bennelong Funds Management, and I'm joined here today by the Portfolio Manager for Cardinia Capital, Christiane Rader. Welcome, Christiane.
Hi, Jodie. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's been a while since we've caught up, so it's great to be having this conversation with you today. As 2021 draws to a close now, what's your view on the outlook for 2022, and in particular inflation, which you've written a lot about over the course of the year?
Yeah, that's right, Jodie. We've been talking about inflation now for probably over 9 months. And to be honest with you, when we first started talking about it, it was considered not mainstream, non-consensus, if you like. But we couldn't escape the fact that we hold countless meetings with management teams each week, not just in Australia, but also overseas. And the continuous feedback we're getting from management teams who really are on the coalface of the economy was that inflationary pressures were being seen, and it was being seen right up and down their logistics chain. It was not just being seen in one or two industries, it was being seen across the board. So it became quite obvious to us that inflation was taking hold, and it was appearing in pretty much every corner of the economy. It's interesting, if you look back into the 70s, when inflation really was an issue and was running at 13% plus, the main drivers of inflation back then were really labor shortage and wage growth. It was food and energy. And funnily enough, they seem to be the same drivers of inflation that we're currently facing in this economy.
So are you seeing signs that inflation could rise to those levels again in the current environment?
No, look, I'm not suggesting that. I don't think we're going to rise to those sort of levels. I think central banks these days are much more attuned to the issues of inflation. I think they'll react much faster. In fact, some of the commentary coming out of the Fed already is much more hawkish. So they will not let inflation get out of control, I don't believe, like what we saw back in the 70s. But look, inflation is a little bit like a supertanker. Once you start the ball rolling, it's really hard to stop it. And we're starting to see inflation across the community. I was speaking to a friend over the weekend, actually, who owns a few local pubs in the area. And he was saying that it was impossible for him to open up for lunch and dinner 7 days a week in December. And the reason for that was he was just finding it simply too hard to find labor. And the staff that he does have, he's had to pay them more to retain them. And so going into Christmas, we're all coming out of lockdown, people want to socialize, Christmas parties are being held. You know, that's a big deal for him. And that's kind of indicative of what we're seeing across, you know, multiple businesses throughout the economy. But it's not just labor, it's also energy and food pressures that we're seeing at the moment.
Right. Well, what about petrol prices? Like, I saw they rose above $1.80 recently.
Look, oil is up 50% over the past year. That has a massive impact right across the economy. I think most consumers would be surprised to hear there's around 6,000 plus essential items that we tend to use frequently, that their key ingredient can be traced back to either oil or petrochemicals. And, you know, it's in our dishwashing liquids, it's in our food preservatives, which is a scary thought, it's in toys, cosmetics, you know, it's in lots of different things. So once oil prices start to move, it does have a profound impact. Food inflation, we're doing some work on food inflation over last month, and, you know, I was genuinely surprised by how much food has risen in price in a very short period of time. I've actually written down a few of the key statistics which jumped out at me. So if you bear with me, I'll read out some of these moves. But the UN food price index is up 33% for the year. Vegetable oil is up 60%, sugar's up 50%, cereal's up over 25%, as is meat, and dairy's up 15%. So if you subscribe to the view that inflation is rising, then you also, I think, come to the conclusion that interest rates are going to lift sooner than I think what the central banks are forecasting.
Right, okay. And look, Christiane, the housing market, it's had a pretty extraordinary run, so surely it's peaked, but won't slowing the housing credit growth impact the banks?
Yeah, look, we think the heat will certainly come out of the housing market when interest rates start to rise. I think it's very hard to imagine that the sort of growth rates that we've seen will be sustained in a high interest rate environment. But look, you know, when it comes to the banks and credit growth and housing growth, we think kind of any weakness in the residential credit growth cycle will be offset by pickup in the business lending market. So if you look at business credit, our base case is going to rise by 4 to 5% a year. There is a segment within business credit which it has been particularly soft, and that's the small medium enterprise market, the SME market. And the reason for that is that segment has been particularly impacted by lockdowns and the pandemic. And once we find ourselves in a situation where, you know, people have confidence that lockdowns are now behind us and we aren't going to revisit that rolling lockdown environment, then these small to medium enterprise businesses will start to have the confidence to reinvest in their business and to grow again. And so it's not inconceivable that you might see that element within business credit really starting to accelerate. And that's one of the reasons why we like NAB. NAB's got one of the strongest business credit franchises out of the big four and possibly in Australia.
Wow. And look, what does this mean for dividends for the bank? Like, are we going to see a return to high payout ratios?
Yeah, I think, you know, APRA just recently came out with their final capital reforms paper this week. It was entirely consistent with consultation papers. It didn't surprise anybody. But on our analysis, you know, the banks are holding excess capital of about $21 billion. So we've already seen capital returns being returned back into the hands of shareholders by way of high dividend payout ratios, buybacks. We think with that sort of excess capital and the banks being in such strong financial health that we expect, you know, further capital returns, further, you know, heightened dividend payments flowing through to shareholders. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, we are so positive on the banks.
So looking forward to next year, where do you think investors can make money in the market next year? Like, what sectors do you think will do best if we go into a period of monetary tightening?
Well, I've mentioned the banks. Probably the only thing I'd add with the banks, we've been managing this strategy for over 15 years. And I've learned two lessons. If you really wanted to earn and to generate good returns out of the banks in a short period of time, and one is to short the banks going into a crisis. And good luck with that, because banks are well loved in this country and they tend to go up. And they tend to go up over the long term. Or you go long the banks immediately after a crisis. Now, we started accumulating our bank position in April 2020, just after the banks bottomed and the market bottomed after the pandemic. We have been really, really comfortable with that position. In fact, we started to top up the banks again in November. So some listeners might be surprised, but the banks were off over 10% since early November. We took that mini correction in the banks as an opportunity to buy some more. The reason why the banks corrected was, A, they went ex-dividend, but also the trading updates indicated that they were coming under margin pressure. But we don't think the banks are going to operate in a vacuum. We think it's, you know, they will respond, and they already have. It's interesting that the major banks' three-year fixed rate mortgages have already increased around 60 basis points. So they're already starting to adjust their pricing to protect their margins. But Jody, in terms of other sectors, we've got a reasonable exposure to resources. I think it makes up about 7 to 8% of the portfolio at the moment. Commodities tend to do very well in inflationary environments. We also are looking at the demand starting to really increase as the world opens up, and that's against a backdrop of restricted supply. So, you know, there's been very little capital investment in mining over a number of years, particularly in copper. So you've got this quite an attractive cocktail of heightened demand with restricted supply. The resources we do have, however, are very much skewed towards green commodities. They are the commodities that we believe will be long-term beneficiaries of this structural trend towards clean energy. So I'm talking here about lithium and also copper.
Okay, and so you are a long short fund, and, you know, where are you more cautious? Like, are you seeing any really good shorting opportunities ahead?
Well, like in a high inflationary environment where interest rates are likely to lift very shortly, there are going to be winners and there's going to be losers. One area that we are cautious on is the longer dated earning companies that with a higher discount rate will impact their earnings quite materially. So, you know, the three key areas we're targeting in our short book is rate-sensitive sectors, loss-making stocks, and also higher-priced, loss-making, lower-quality technology companies. And, you know, lower-quality technology companies is probably an area that we've been particularly focused on. We've been short a number of those names, and we've done very well out of them. The one thing I'd say about shorting in this market is shorting has been somewhat problematic since the market bottomed back in March 2021. And the reason for that is that the markets have generally been very strong. And when markets are strong like what we've seen over the last 18 months to 2 years, it tends to lift all boats. So the rising tide lifts all boats from the quality names, you know, as well as the lower quality names. So, you know, it's been a tough time for shorters. We approach our short book as a profit center. We consistently make money on our shorts. So the second we feel that we are in the wrong environment and we're not making money out of our shorts, we'll either reduce the size of them or we'll close them out completely.
Mm-hmm. Look, Christian, the fund is typically used within a portfolio to smooth market volatility and protect capital on the downside. So when you're constructing a client portfolio, what asset class should they consider allocating this fund to and why?
Jodie, that's a really good question. We get this question a lot. It's not such an easy question to answer, actually. I mean, where exactly do you position an Australian equity lower volatility absolute return fund? I mean, is it in the Australian equity bucket because we invest in Australian equities with Australian equity returns? Or do you stick in the alternative bucket because we have the ability to short? You know, in the 15 years of managing this strategy, I've come to the view that everyone has a different opinion on this and nobody's more right than anybody else. We have some clients who place us in the Australian equity bucket. We have others who are adamant, no, you're an alternative. You've got the ability to short, you're in the alternative bucket. To be honest, we don't put ourselves in any particular bucket. You know, what we do is we provide exposure to the Australian equity market with lower risk. And for 15 years, we've provided significantly lower volatility. And that's due to the strong risk controls that we have, which we've spoken to, you know, at length on previous, you know, podcasts. But look, we provide attractive risk return metrics, you know, in a blended portfolio environment. And I guess it points to the attractiveness of this sort of strategy that it really does appeal, you know, to both sets of investors.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Christian. Look, it's always a pleasure chatting with you and there's some really great information there. So thanks very much for your time today. Cardinia Capital release regular insight papers about various investment topics. So if you're not already receiving our updates, please click on the link below to subscribe. And if you would like further information about the Cardinia Absolute Return Fund, please contact your Bennelong account director. Thanks so much for tuning in and have a great day.